Stevens, Senator Torgerson, Senator Wilkins, and Senator Elton will take up HJR 48 first. Who's here for that? Okay, let's rock and roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Judy Ulmer, staff to Representative Pete Cott with the Rules Committee. With House Joint Resolution 48, the Alaska State Legislature encourages Congress to amend its public lands laws to provide a timely way to return the withdrawn lands to fuller public use. Throughout much of the United States, especially the western United States and Alaska, the federal government's withdrawn land for a variety of reasons. They withdraw the lands, and then those lands are off limits to other selections and designations, such as states' right-of-ways, state selection, mining claims, native allotments, etc. Many of the federally withdrawn lands are for public purposes, such as parks and refuges. Others are withdrawn to give agencies the flexibility to consider the proposed uses of the land, and still others seem to have been withdrawn for arbitrary political purposes. When the federal land is withdrawn, it's closed until the withdrawal is removed, which in some cases requires an act of Congress. Creates a problem where the land remains closed to entry even when the original purpose for the withdrawal has been accomplished or it has lapsed. In Alaska, a lot of the federally withdrawn lands have been selected by the state of Alaska in accordance with the Alaska Statehood Act for transfer to the state-owned lands. Some of the lands are in withdrawal status, have the high mineral potential that could benefit the state's economy. Other lands are selected for access corridors, but in all cases, the state selected lands can't be transferred, and Alaska loses opportunities. Out of Bristol Bay Native Corporation, the Vice President Paul Rell of the Lands and Resources part of that corporation quoted that the obsolete federal land withdrawals are like speed bumps on their highway to economic prosperity. With House Joint Resolution 48 requesting that Congress amend the country's public land laws so that the land withdrawals will sunset in 10 years unless the agency responsible for managing the land provides a justification to Congress. It also requests that Congress require the federal land managing agencies to compile a comprehensive listing of the withdrawn lands that are under their jurisdiction. And that listing would include, first, the exact geographical coordinates for the withdrawal, secondly, the legal authority for that withdrawal, and third, that the document establishing the withdrawal, and fourth, the proposed disposition of the affected lands. It also requests that they file a plan with Congress within 1 year defining how those withdrawals will be terminated. The requirement would extend to all the agencies in the United States that manage public lands. A lot of the federal departments and agencies are involved in land management. Some of them aren't the ones that would immediately come to mind, like the Post Office, Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Agriculture, Department of Defense, in addition to the more obvious ones that we're familiar with here, the Bureau of Land Management and National Park Services. The Bristol Bay Native Corporation again provides a picture saying that the obsolete withdrawals are like the human appendix, that it serves no purpose, but it has the potential to kill you. With House Joint Resolution 48, Alaska State Legislature encourages Congress to amend the public land laws of the United States to provide a timely means to return those withdrawn public lands to fuller use.
Questions? Okay. I have one. Page 2, line 4. Rescinding this request of the Alaska Congressional Delegation do 1 through 4, and then you say, as well as the congressional delegations of several states. That doesn't seem to fit in there unless you're sending this to those several states. And I really don't care if it's in there or not. I'm just pointing out the fact that doesn't belong in there. But what several states are there?
I'm not sure about that. I imagine the western states, but I'm not sure.
Pardon me?
Babbling.
there, I don't think it fits, but I don't care. We take it out or not. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, move to report.
Anybody else want to testify to Bill? Anybody on teleconference? All right.
Mr. Chairman, move to report.
I'm just thinking of that you might just modify it, either remove it completely or modify it to say allegations of similarly affected states or.
Well, it would be appropriate if we were sending copies to somebody.
That's right. If we had a list of copies down at the bottom, yeah.
We're only sending them to our people, so.
Move to report HJR 48 from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the bill moves on. Next, we have House Bill 358. This is an act relating to the optional exemption for municipal property taxes for certain land in which timber is harvested. Prime sponsor is Representative Chenault.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. First off, HB 358 gives municipalities an additional tool to lower the threat of wildfires on the spruce bark beetle kill forest land. HB 358 will allow municipalities the option to waive property taxes on roads or other property improvements that facilitate the removal of the beetle-killed timber. For a little history on the Kenai Peninsula, on the peninsula we have roughly about 2.2 million acres of timberland. And of that, a little over a million acres are infested with the spruce bark beetle. In an attempt to mitigate the fire threat of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, they tried to enact a property tax waiver program as a part of their beetle mitigation efforts. But the plan was blocked when borough attorneys found that state law would not allow for such breaks. HB 358 simply makes the necessary changes to state law to allow the Kenai Peninsula Borough or other municipalities in a similar situation to help protect themselves without having to take on additional tax liabilities. This measure does not mandate tax breaks, but merely allows municipal assemblies the option. Also, find that there's a copy of the Kenai Peninsula Borough resolution supporting HB 358 and photos of the beetle infestation on the peninsula. And with that, Mr. Speaker, concludes my testimony, and I'll attempt to answer any questions you may have.
Questions?
Nobody? All right.
Do you want to go first? Mr. Chair, just real quickly, I'm assuming on page 2, line 1, that the municipalities would then be the ones that determine what at risk means what at risk of being infested by insects means. They'd make the determinations.
I would say that they do. And I don't know if there's anybody online from the borough to testify or not. And that may be their position that maybe they should answer that question. But that is my assumption.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
I think with the advice, Kenai Borough has a forester on staff, but they also have the Forest Service is right there, and they get a lot of recommendations. They're the ones that shoot the aerial photography and everything else. So as far as the Kenai is concerned, it's all at risk at this point.
And my assumption is this mostly is a Kenai region, Kenai Peninsula region.
Anchorage, Matsu. Yeah. It's heavily infested up there. For as far as taxing jurisdictions, it would be able to use this.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
But there are some Okay. Any other Senator Taylor, I'm sorry.
On page 1, line 10, it says that the municipality may provide that an exemption for land under this subsection applies only to increases in assessed value that result from the timber harvest. Is that how the assessor in the area is showing an increase in value because the timber's been removed?
No, the increase, Senator, through the chair, would be if the parcel was of such configuration that they had to build a road into it, for instance, then that road becomes an improvement. And because of the improvement, then there would be an assessed value added to that piece of property because of the timber harvest. That road may not be built there if they weren't harvesting the timber.
So the only tax break anybody's going to get is they're going to pay the same amount of taxes they paid the year before or the year before that, and they will not have to pay an increased tax because they improved the property by removing the bad timber.
That's my assessment of it, yes.
I just wanted that on the record, that harvesting timber can improve the value of property. It's a unique concept that most people don't realize.
Other questions? Okay.
Thanks.
We have Scott or Jeff Jenke on teleconference. You want to testify?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Jenke. I'm the director of the Commission of Sports, and I'm here today to testify in support of Hospital 58 and answer any questions. As you all aware, there's the Kenai, Interpol, or Copper River has been undergoing infestation for the last 10 years. This bill removes a disincentive for harvesting fruit threatened and killed by the fruit bar people. That's important for three reasons. One, to reduce fire hazard, as Representative Chenault mentioned. Second, to encourage reforestation. And third, to recover what value still remains. Because of the rapid declining market for dead fruit, there's no longer much financial incentive, and it varies, harvesting very covers the cost of harvesting and reforesting. Therefore, we support this bill and any other incentives to encourage
Thanks, Jeff. The question, Senator Taylor.
You have anybody else?
Yeah. Tim DeVar.
Thank you, Chairman, Senator Torgerson. I'm mostly here to answer any questions the committee might have, but the Borough Assembly is in support of HB 358 for all the reasons you heard.
Okay. So the questions of the Tim's the Assembly President for the Kenai Borough. Is there questions? Blaine Gillen. Okay, he's not there, I guess. Anyone else here that wishes to testify? Okay, Senator Taylor.
Move the bill for committee with individual recommendation.
A motion to move the bill. Is there objection? We have a zero fiscal note with it. So, hearing no objection, that bill will move on to also. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next, we have House Bill 447, an act relating to interest rates are charged by loans of Fishery and Agriculture Bank. Go ahead, Dale.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Dale Anderson, legislative aide to Representative Mulder. House Bill 447 addresses a problem in Alaska Statutes 45.45 that inhibits the ability of the Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank to serve its mandated purpose of loans for Alaskan small business enterprises. Like most states, Alaska has what is commonly called the usury law, a limitation on the rate of interest for certain types of loans, usually small loans. AS 45.45010 defines a small loan as under $25,000 and establishes a maximum annual fixed interest rate for such loans of 5% above the 12th Federal Reserve District discount rates. In Alaska, conventional lending institutions, including commercial banks and credit unions, are able to gain exemption from state statutes by means of federal preemption provisions. Because of CFAB's organizational structure as a cooperative bank, it has no such option for exemption. Subject to federal law, the organization cannot charge too much interest. In reality, a percentage of the interest collected in excess of its needs is credited back to its member borrowers. In the past, the commercial fishing community has not generated significant demands for small loans. However, because limited entry permits have recently begun trading in the $20,000 to $40,000 range, there is a much greater need for small loans. CFAB's subjectivity to the existing statutes, along with the period of lowest financial market rates in over 20 years, renders it unable to make significant numbers of small loans to Alaskan residents, opening the potential for a drastic shift of permit ownership demographics. The basic purpose of 447 is to ensure that CFAB is able to continue serving its Alaskan member borrowers in an efficient manner and equitably complete with other lending institutions serving their needs.
Questions? Okay, they're not. Ed Crane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ed Crane, and I'm president of the Alaska Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank. And I think the sponsor, this is a fairly simple issue from our standpoint. And I think the sponsor statement, as well as some material that I provided to each of your staff, but I assume you may have had some discussion with, pretty much summarizing both the purpose and the effect of it. So I will simply ask for questions, if I may. Even.
Questions? Okay, there's none. Jerry Weaver, we can stay there. There might be some after we hear from the bankers.
Are you ready for me, Mr. Chairman? Mr. Jerry Weaver.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Weaver, and I'm a senior vice president with Wells Fargo Bank Alaska NA, and I'm also secretary of the Alaska Bankers Association, and I'm authorized to speak for both today. Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make one technical correction and kind of what's been said as to whether or not Alaska banks are subject to that statute or to usury limitations on loans below $25,000. And the actual wording of the 1980 Federal Depository Institution Deregulatory Act states basically that interest may not be charged that is 5% above the annual rate of interest charged member banks by the 12th Federal Reserve District. However, a loan or contract that exceeds $25,000 is exempt from this provision. Mr. Chairman, in essence, what that says is that the banks making loans in Alaska are in fact subject to usury statute, in fact the same amount of interest that can be charged on this. And we believe it would set a very poor precedent to excuse one of the standard lenders in our state from that usury standard who makes the same type of loans. We certainly understand very clearly what Mr. Anderson said. We certainly don't disagree with the position that CFAB is in regards to limited permit entries loans under $25,000. And we believe it could be very useful to the state to keep its law consistent to simply add a small short line to the end of the proposal for House Bill 447 that says something like in connection with or just ending the money lender under this chapter in connection with extension of credits using the security of limited entry permits, meaning that that particular area that presents them with problem would be exempt from usury interest, but if all other loans, including any loans under $25,000, the same as with the rest of the banking industry. That's the end of my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I try and answer questions if I can.
Give us that language again. In what?
Basically, the Federal Deposit Federal Depository Institutions Deregulatory Act of 1980 states, just very simply, interest may not be charged that is 5% above the annual rate of interest charged member banks by the 12th Federal Reserve District. However, a loan or contract that exceeds $25,000 is exempt. And of course, this has not been much of a problem to any of us in years because very they're under 25,000 anymore. So we have suggested that that a bank is exempt from AS, or that the bank, meaning CFAP, is exempt from AS 4545010 when lending money under this chapter in connection with extensions of credit using the security of limited entry permits. I believe that solves the problem that Mr. Crane is trying to resolve for their institution, and we certainly agree that that problem would exist. However, it keeps the usury statute in line, I think, with all of the competing financial institutions in the state, those that we define as banks.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Taylor.
I got in connection with extensions of credit. What was the remaining portion of that sentence?
Yeah, go slow.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. You're right. I get nervous. I speak too fast. Extensions of credit using the security of limited entry permits, which of course only CFAP can make those loans anyway, so that gives them an exclusive exemption to do what they need to do for the benefit of Alaska's fishing industry.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Weaver? Do you have a comment?
I would urge Mr. Weaver to and his organizations to perhaps revisit this issue with their attorneys. We've I have an informal legal opinion here dated back in 1986, by the way, relative to that Federal Depository Institutions Deregulatory Act of 1980, and it appears that he may be reading only part of that law based on the advice that we've had. And in addition to that, by coincidence, it was a former senior vice president of National Bank of Alaska, Wells Fargo's predecessor, who discussed this at length with me several years ago and explained in quite some detail how the what's called the most favored lender doctrine applies to commercial banks, insured banks in Alaska, and preempts the state usury law. The federal law that is being referred to does appear to have a limitation related to business and agricultural loans. But that is the, now I'm really not trying to make any assert. I'm not an attorney, and I'm not trying to make any assertions, and I'm not necessarily trying to contradict anything here. But empirical evidence over the years has suggested to me that there's some misinterpretation occurring here. The limitation that's being suggested, frankly, I don't know. Whether that would be any particular problem or not, I guess I would simply observe that one of the reasons that CFAB seems to, at least in my view, appear so frequently in the legislature is because our statute, 4481, has set forth a business plan, if you will, in stone, in a sense, and we operate in a rather dynamic and evolving industry, and we have quite consistently found over the years that things have outgrown what the statute says, and I frankly hate to see just little limitations thrown in here and there. That I mean, we're here today really because of the fact that the legislature created a platypus, and we don't fit anywhere else. So I would, at least from that standpoint, I tend to think it's not really a good idea to throw in some additional little limitation for CFAP. I'm not suggesting that it would, I don't know that it would hinder us.
And reading between the lines, the banking community is concerned about the loans that you make on the last authority we gave you for tourism businesses. Well, not having the same rules that they do.
They Some members of that.
He didn't say that. I'm just saying that.
No, I understand. Some members of that community have been happy to refer applicants to us. So it, you know, again, I'm not trying to pick a fight or start an argument over that. And frankly, I guess if it is indeed a fact that commercial banks are subject to that use fee law, I'd like to talk to them about my credit
card.
Well,
let me hold the bill, and we will get a legal opinion. Mr. Weaver, are you still on there? Is he still there?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, we were on mute. Yes, I am.
Okay, can you have your legal people answer this question and get me an opinion, and we'll ask our alleged legal, might be outside their expertise, but we'll give them a shot and see what they come up with.
That sounds like a very reasonable solution, Mr. Chairman, and I'll do it immediately.
And Ed, I don't know who do you use, Department of Law, or do you have your own?
No, we don't. We pay $285 an hour.
Well, let's let them. We ought to be able to understand. I mean, Jerry, have them quote the actual. Not just an opinion from a banker's point of view, but I mean, have them actually quote some federal laws and, you know, what we're trying to get back to at here.
We'll do that, Mr. Chairman.
All right. What, you have
something? Just one observation. I believe Representative Murkowski, before the session, who was considering this legislation, I believe her office
might have it already.
Did confer with the Department of Law as well as with the Division of Banking, basically sent them that 3 or 4 page paper that I distributed to your staff and asked if they had any problems with it. And
I'll check with her then if she might have something that we don't have to go through our legals. Senator Tabet.
The restrictions suggested by Mr. Weaver would limit you to making loans only when there was the security provided by a limited entry permit.
Mm-hmm.
Would that necessarily be so constraining as to vitiate the effect of this legislation?
Well, until now, that is until in recent months or the last year or two, the applications that we have received for small loans have tended not to be for permits because permits values or permit prices, I should not call them values, permit prices tended to be a lot higher than that. Actually, the loans that we were not able to make, the applications we were not able to entertain, tended to be loans for gear or some sort of vessel improvement and that sort of thing. So the limitation would be applicable to the circumstances that have brought this to the fore today, but still would not resolve the longstanding issues with, there have been times when we have encouraged a borrower to apply for $25,010 so we could go ahead and make the loan. And that's a poor practice. It's not something that I'm really comfortable with. But
in other words, you foresee having to make loans or having applications for loans where, quote, the security of the limited entry permit itself might not be the primary security that you
exactly
would be looking to.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we need to work that out. So let's, Mr. Weaver will get us that as soon as he can, and hopefully we can bring this back up either Monday or Wednesday next week when we're meeting. Okay. Anybody else here wish to testify on this bill? Okay, hearing none, then we will set that aside. And that actually concludes our business for today. We are meeting Monday and Wednesday next week, and I put bills previously heard on Friday in case we want to get something done, but actually the committee is in pretty good shape for getting legislation going. So with that, we will stand adjourned.